This week's parsha is Matis and Maaseh. We're going to be focusing on Parshas Matis, and I like to work from the end of the parsha back to the beginning. So we'll begin on page 910. Page 910, Parak Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph. And there was an abundant amount of cattle to the sons of Reuven, the sons of Gad, very great. And they saw the land of Yazer and the land of Gilad. Behold, the place was the place for cattle. Now, the Jewish people are on the other side of the Jordan River, Transjordan. That's where they're encamped right now. They had defeated the kings, Sichon and Og, who were those kings who ruled over those lands. The Jewish people destroyed them and their armies and took over their land. And now, the land that they're in is extremely well-suited for raising livestock. And the sons of God and sons of Reuven came, and they said to Moshe and to Aaron, to Elazar HaKayin, from the Siyah Edelema, to the princes of the assembly, saying, Atarois v'divayin v'yazer v'demra v'cheshvayin v'alalei usavam unavayu v'ayin. This is a list of a number of cities in that area. Ha'aretz ha'shika Hashem lefnei adas Yisrael eretz miknehi. The land that God has, that God smote before the assembly of Israel, is a land of cattle. V'vedech ha'mikneh, and to your servants there is cattle. Vayomru, and they said, Imatzenuchein beinecha, if we have found favor in your eyes, Yutanas aretz hazayis avadecha lachuza, let this land be given to your servants as an inheritance. Al tabirenu es hayardein, do not cross us over the Jordan River. So, number of questions here. The point here is of the tribes of Gad and Reuven, is that they have a lot of cattle, and this would be the perfect place for them to be able to live and raise their cattle. And therefore, they don't want to cross over into Eretz Yisrael with the rest of the Jewish people. So, if you have a request, right? If you have a request, the order, or rather, let's put it this way. The normal way of making a request over here should have been that the request should have been made. Don't allow us not to cross over. Why? Because we have a lot of cattle. And this area is very, very well suited for raising livestock. What do? They go in and they list off a bunch of names of the cities. They say it's very fertile. Our servants have cattle. Let us stay. It seems to be the backwards way of approaching the question. Like you're starting off, they're coming to Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm just going to give an example. You know, I'm just using examples, right? You know. Tel Aviv, Yerushalayim, Rehovot, you know, they're just mentioning a bunch of names. You have no idea why they're mentioning a bunch of names. No idea. Okay. Then you start saying, it's very fertile land. Okay. Your servants have a lot of cattle. Okay, nice. We want to stay here. Very indirect way of getting to the point. Get to the point. We want to stay here because we have a lot of cattle, and this is perfect land for doing so. Why didn't they do it in that order? And that would seem to be the most clearest order, not in a very indirect and unclear way. Why did they do it this way? Now, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu responds very negatively to what they said. Let's read on, Pasuk Vav. Vayomer Moshe lebnei Gad ulebnei Reuven, and Moshe said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuven, Hachechem yavayu lamelchava v'atem teishvufai, will your brothers go to war and you're going to stay here? Why are you causing the hearts of the Jewish people to go astray from crossing over to the land that Hashem has given them? So did your forefathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. They went up to Nachal Eshkol. They saw the land. And they caused the hearts of the Bnei Yisrael to stray away. so as not to come to the land that God has given them. Vayicharaf Hashem emohu vayishav aleimar. Hashem became angry and he swore, in Yiru ha'elim and Mitzrayim ben Esrim shen of Amala, that anybody from 20 years and up that left Egypt shall not see Esel Adama shen ishvat Rav Yitzchak Yaakov, that I gave to Rav Yitzchak and Yaakov, to let me go achalai, because they not fulfill their responsibilities to me. Built the Kalei ben Yefuna Akhenizi, the exception being Kalei ben Yeshua, etc. And you're doing the same thing right now. You're getting up and saying that we're not going to cross over to Eretz Yisrael. You cause the Jewish people to rebel and say, we're not going either, and we're just going to be back to where we started off with 40 years ago. Okay. Right, let's now skip to Pasuk Tes Zayin on page 912. And they approached Moshe, and they said, pens for our sheep, we will build here for our livestock, and cities for our children. And we will go armed before the Jewish people until they are brought to their place. Our children will remain in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We should not return to our homes until the Jewish people, each person, receives his inheritance. We will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan. For our portion will come to us on the eastern side of the Jordan. Okay. So Moshe Rabbeinu responds very negatively to them. And at the end, they come back and they say, we will fight together with the Jewish people, and we will not settle back in our land until everyone else is settled. Now one last question before I get to the explanation. And that is, another interesting thing is that the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven mention the cities, they mention the land, they mention their cattle, then there's a break. Right? Between Pasuk, Dalid, and Hay, there's a break. It's a stuma. In the Sefer Torah, it's an empty space, which actually typically symbolizes a break in the discussion. And then they say, we want to stay. What's the break about? It's all one request. There shouldn't be that kind of break. It's one request. The lands are good for cattle. We have cattle. Let us stay here. Making a break almost makes it sound like it's a separate thing. Why is the Torah doing that? So Zev-Lev gives the following explanation. And he says that to fully appreciate his explanation, we need to Now, again, on page 912, after Bnei Gadim and Reuven tell Moshe that we're going to build places for our sheep and families, and we're going to go fight with the Jewish people to conquer Eretz Yisrael, Pasuk Chaf, Vayim Aleihem Moshe, Moshe said to them, Im Tasim Es Adavar Hazeh, if you shall do this, Im Teichos Lifnei Hashem L'Molchama, if you shall arm yourselves before Hashem for war, V'Avar Lachem Kol Chalutz Es Hayadim Lifnei Hashem, and every armed man shall cross over the Jordan before God, at Arishas Aiva Mipanav, until God chases out his enemies from before him. The Nichmashar Safnei Hashem, the land will be conquered before God, V'achar Toshuvu, and after that you shall return. The Hiyisim Nikiyim Me Hashem Mi Yisrael. You shall be clean from God and from Israel. V'ha'isa Ha'aretz Hazay Salam Achuzot Me Hashem, and then this land shall be for you as an inheritance, as a portion before God. If you don't do so, know how you have sinned. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you keep your part of the deal, the Yisim Nikiyim Hashem Yisrael, you shall be clean from God and from Israel. Everybody will be happy. You have fulfilled all your responsibilities to everyone. Now from these words, you shall be clean from God and from Israel, the Gemara says that teaches us another lesson. Another lesson is here, being clean in the eyes of the Jewish people is keeping the deal. Right? If they, you don't want them to think that you're just, chickening out. So you're going to go ahead and you're going to fight. And if you do so, you will be clean in the eyes of the Jewish people, which in the simple explanation means you have fulfilled your promise to them. The Gemara learns from here that everything that we do has to be squeaky clean. No one should ever be suspicious from us. That's what it means, you shall be clean from Hashem and from Israel. It's not enough just to be clean in the eyes of God because God knows I'm doing the right thing. You can't do things in a way that people suspect you of wrongdoing. That's the whole concept of Maaseh Hayom. That don't do things that people will interpret in the wrong way. And even though people are supposed to give one another the benefit of the doubt, that may be true, but at the same time, we should not put people in the situation where they need to judge favorably, and maybe they won't. We should do our part to be clean. No one should have any suspicions about us. Whether their obligation is to give us the benefit of the doubt when they see questionable things, that's not license for me to do questionable things. And this is derived from these words. The use in the Kiyam Hashem, the Yisrael, you should be clean from Hashem and from the Jewish people. And with that concept of not doing things that create any kind of suspicion, that, says Rabbi Leff, is what was going on here. And he says like this, when B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven wanted to make a request to Moshe, they understood what Moshe's eventual concern was, which is if we, request to stay, people are going to think that we're requesting to stay because we're scared to go over and fight. That we're just repeating what happened 38 years before when the Meraglim came and said, can't do it. They're too strong. It's too fortified. We can't conquer the land. They understood that their request to stay here could cause that suspicion. That, of course, was not their reason. Their reason was because they saw that based on what Hashem had given them, this is where they need to be. But they understood that that request could bring suspicion. So therefore, they figured that they'll approach Moshe in a very indirect way and hope that Moshe will say, you know what? You should stay on this side. Let it be Moshe's idea. As long, the more indirect they are in their request, the less chance, so to speak, that they could be blamed, they could be blamed for wanting to stay on this side and causing the suspicion that they're afraid to go in. So therefore, the Rebbe says, they walked over to Moshe and they listed off the cities. They listed off the cities. And if you look, if you look back on page 910, so Pasuk Gimel is a list of all the cities, and this is the land that Hashem has written before the Jewish people is a land of cattle. There's an asnachta there, that capitulation sign on the bottom. It's an asnachta. That means break, stop. And then it says, into your servants is cattle. So the left wants to learn that the first thing the Jewish people did was list up all the cities and hope that Moshe Rabbeinu gets the point. When he didn't respond, when he didn't react, he said, it's a land of cattle. And again, they're hoping he's going to respond. He's not responding. So they say, Vavadach Mikveh, and your servants have cattle. And then there's a break, because they know that this is it, right? If he doesn't respond to these hints, then we've got to make it very clear. So they break. They give it a little time. Still no reaction. Finally, they'll have to say, we want to stay here. So their hope was, the reason why they did it in this way was because they're trying to create a situation where they're not asking it, so that people won't think that they're asking, trying to stay, because they're afraid to go in. So whether you break it up like he does or not, but the point is that they're trying to do it indirectly. They're trying to come in a backhanded way so that it's Moshe Rabbeinu suggesting it instead of them. Not happening. So they make the request. Moshe Rabbeinu, on the other hand, was trying to teach B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven, it's not going to help how you ask. It doesn't matter how indirect you're going to ask. At the end of the day, if this is what you want to do, you have to realize that you will be suspect of not going in because you're afraid. That's how people are going to take it. That's how people could take it. By making this request, and again, no mention of coming to fight, So by making this request, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you know, I'm not saying that you're a bunch of cowards. I'm not saying that the problem is you. The problem is, though, that the Jewish people will perceive this, and it could create a rebellious Jewish people to say, well, if they're scared, we're not going either. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't respond to them, not because he doesn't get what they're trying to do, but he doesn't respond to them, trying to tell them the request itself is going to create the possible perception. And that perception is going to cause them to think, to suspect you of being cowards. When they responded and they said, we'll fight, we'll go and fight with them, so then already you can't be suspected of being cowards. You're ready to go to war. And that was how they would now take away any suspicion that the reason they're not going in is because they're afraid. But the discussion here is basically how the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven know that their request could cause people to suspect them of cowardice. So therefore, they try to ask the question in a way that instead of them making the request, it's Moshe Rabbeinu's suggestion. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no matter what, if at the end of the day this is what you're wanting to accomplish, you want to stay here, this can cause the Jewish people, again, to suspect that you are cowards, you're scared to go, and that will change their minds. Therefore, once they responded and they said, no, we'll go fight, they made it very clear there's no issue of cowardice by them, and therefore everything can work. But the reason why they started in such an indirect way was because, as Rabbi Lev points out, from what our sages learn from the Yis and the Kiyam, that you shall be clean. You have to do everything in a way that no one suspects you of wrongdoing. They understood that. They understood that. And they were trying to accomplish that. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're not going to accomplish it in this manner. When they said, we will accomplish taking care of any suspicion because we will fight with them and leave our families behind, then Moshe says, if you do that, Yis and the Kiyam, you'll be clean. You'll be clean in the sense of, number one, you'll fulfill your responsibility. And again, you'll be clean because then it'll be very clear that there was never an issue of cowardice here. So that is Rabbi Lev's approach here to the discussion between Moshe Rabbeinu and B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. Now, next thing I want to talk about, again, it is part of the parsha.
I never thought about this before, but it also suggests they spent 40 years to get to Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
And here they are just about to go and they say, you know, we kind of like this place. I mean, this is not Eretz Yisrael. They haven't crossed over.
It's not Eretz Yisrael proper.
So in a way they're saying, you know, I don't think it's worth it. You know, this is a wonderful place they're supposed to be heading to. We kind of like this. It's nice land. Let's just stay here.
You're asking a different question now.
I know I am.
That's not this discussion. That's a separate discussion about what exactly are B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven doing here. How are they giving up Eretz Yisrael for this?
Yeah, right.
Not because how does it look? Again, how does it look
about why are they doing it, right?
And why are they doing it, you know? Even after why they're doing it, right, you can still, there's still a question, how does it look?
Right.
How does it look? They take care of saying, okay, we will fight with you. But how do they give up Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah.
So, like I say, that wasn't part of the discussion for tonight, but one way of looking at it is that B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven are saying, if this is what Hashem has given us, it says, they had mik and nerav, right? Hashem blessed them with tremendous amount of flock, right? To them, that was Hashem saying, if this is what we've been given, right, then this is what we work with. This is what Hashem has given us. Hashem hasn't given it to us randomly. And if He's given it to us, and this is how we are supposed to live our lives and support ourselves, because this is what He gave you, this is what He gave us, then that means this is where we're meant to be.
And there
is
a soil extended on the other side of Jordan River.
Right, it did. Now, that part of the other side also had a status of Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't completely outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's not Eretz Yisrael proper. It had a status for many laws like Eretz Yisrael also. But again, it's not Eretz Yisrael proper.
Right.
But it's really about the idea of, if this is what Hashem has given me, this is my mission. And this is what I have to work with.
Well,
I'm not getting into it now.
Right,
that's
okay.
It. Okay. Now, when the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven respond on page 912, Pasuk Tazayin, they say, "Vayikshu Elav." The pasuk says, "Vayikshu Elav." They approached him. Vayimru, they said, "Gidreis Tzayin Nivna LeMikneinu Pari V'Arim LeTapenu." Pens of sheep we shall build for our cattle here, and cities for our children. Rashi points out here that the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben spoke in a way that actually showed a very poor attitude on their parts. Rashi, Tes Zayin, third line from the top in the right column, Nivden Lebekneinu Pai. We shall build for our cattle here. Chasim Hayu Amamayim Yeshma Bnei Bnei Seyem. They were more concerned with their money than their sons and daughters. Shekdimu Mekneihem Letapam. Because in the way they talk, what do they say? We'll build for our cattle. They first mention the cattle, and then cities for our children. You know, children come first. And they mention the cattle before the children. So the Bnei Reuven were actually showing a very poor attitude in seemingly showing more concern for their money than for their children. Amar lahem Moshe, lo kein. Moshe says to them, this is not right. Asu ha'ikar, ikar v'tafel tafel. Keep your priorities right. First you build cities for your children, and then the pens for your sheep. When Moshe responds, Moshe says in Pasuk Chaf Dalid, he switches the order. He says, build cities for your children and pens for your sheep. That was Moshe Rabbeinu saying to them, you got your priorities mixed up. Because you're mentioning the cattle before the children. And it's supposed to be the children before the cattle. So the Sefer Bar Yosef asks, working with the fact that the people who were in this generation, many of them had left Egypt, or their parents had left Egypt, they lived with miracles constantly, this Dar HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, with all its shortcomings, right, is described by our sages as the greatest generation that ever lived. And therefore, working with that approach, he finds it very difficult that they were just so crass to say they care about the animals more than the children. It doesn't sit well by him to say they're such great people that was their attitude. Now, to some degree, we're going to have to say it. Chazal say it. The question is, though, how do we truly understand what was happening? And what was really happening here? And what deep down was causing this to happen? Meaning, we're going to have to give an explanation that they had a good reason to mention the cattle before the children. They thought they had a good reason. Moshe said, you're making a mistake. And then we have to understand what is the root of their mistake. What was their mistake based on? What was happening inside of them that caused this mistake? Our sages are saying what caused the mistake on their part was the fact that they seemingly had more concern for their cattle than their children. They never meant that. They meant something else, but what they were saying was mistaken because deep down there was some kind of problem of being more focused on their money than their children. So the Bar Yosef says like this, very, very interesting explanation. And he starts with a Rashi. I'm going to make sure I find the right place for the Rashi. Very interesting Rashi. Back in Parshas Chukas. And this is Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Okay. Page 852. Okay. So, Pasuk Chaf Gimel reads, "V'lo'nasan sichan es bnei Yisrael avar b'gvuloi." Sichan did not allow the Jewish people to pass through his boundaries. "V'yaseif sichan es kol amoy." Sichan gathered all his nation. "V'yaseif kras Yisrael amidbara." They went out to greet the Jewish people in the desert. "V'yavo yatsa." They came to Yatsa. "V'yilachem b'Yisrael." And they waged war against Yisrael. "V'yaker Yisrael b'chareb." And the Jewish people smote him by sword and took over his land. So Rashi in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, the second Rashi, Vayetzi Yisrael, Vayetzi Mikras Yisrael, he went out to greet the Jewish people. So Rashi says, "Ilu haisa cheshbon melei yitushin in kaber yochelo lekavsha." The cheshbon was the city where Sichon lived. Cheshbon was so fortified that you could have just had mosquitoes in there, and no one would able to have conquered it. "V'mhayu Sichon mikvah chalash." And if Sichon, this king who they fought a war against, would have been in a very weak village, an unfortified village, No one could conquer it. The Koshkin is Yoyeb Cheshvan, or the more so, if Sichon is in Cheshvan, if he's in a city. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Mani Matriach Albonai Kol Zois, Lotzerah Kol Ir V'Ir. What do I need to trouble my children to have to lay siege to every city and conquer it that way? Nothing believe Kol Anshayam Elchama Lotzeis Ben Ayaris. You know what he did? He put an idea in their head. Everybody left their city. Everybody left their cities to go fight the Jewish people. There was a cops who couldn't move Malkim Echad, and everybody gathered to one place for a war, Misham Nafu. And they all died there. When Misham Ocho Yisrael and Ha'arim, they never even egged them. So then the Jewish people went to the cities, and there was no one there to fight against them. Kein Yisrael, Melon Nashim Atah. No men, only women and children. The Pasuk says, Sichem gathered Kol Amo, he gathered his entire nation. Every man went out to fight that war. But by going out to fight that war, every man left their cities. And being concentrated in one place and then being beaten, they were all gone. And the Jewish people just walked into the cities afterwards. So this is how Rashi tells us the war with Sichon went. Sichon really could have stayed in his city, nothing would have happened to him. But Sichon wanted to fight a war with the Jewish people, and he figured, and Hashem put in his mind, you know, let's go out, let's go fight a war with them, let's be aggressive, let's go get them. And everybody joined him, he had everybody join him. Everybody got wiped out, and the Jewish people just walked on into the cities untouched and uncontested. Now, the Ben Yosef suggests that therefore, one could say that when the Jewish people took over their cities, did they destroy them? No need. They just took the women and children, did whatever they had to do, and they just can walk in right there, you know? Perfect, you know, finished houses, right? Everything's in perfect shape. Yeah, maybe you got to go ahead and fix it up a little bit here and there. You know, you got to get rid of the crosses and the other things that are over there. You know, and maybe, you know, this was only a house for you know, for a family with a boy and a girl. I got, you know, I have 9 children. I'm gonna have to you know, renovate the house a little bit. Okay, but basically, one could say that they walked into a ready-made city for them just to move in, ready to move in. On the other hand, for their sheep and cattle, which was Miknerav, Atzamaid, it was a tremendous amount, okay, for that already, they had to do a lot of work. They had to build pens, they had to build whatever they had to build for the animals. Therefore, says the Bnei Yosef, in the minds of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, the bigger job here was the cattle. Anything that they had to do in the homes for their children, their families, was minor. So the reason that they mentioned the cattle before the children wasn't because they care about their cattle more than their children, but they were talking about where's the work that we have to do. We have to do work for our cattle first. That's the bigger job, not because it's more important, it's just the bigger job. They're listing the bigger job before the smaller job, which is a very, very normal way of speaking. Moshe Rabbeinu says no, you're making a mistake here. What's your mistake? Your mistake is that all you need to do is to renovate some of the homes so you'll be more comfortable in them. That's not what you need to do, Moshe Rabbeinu says. You need to build these cities. That means you need to raise the cities and rebuild them. Because all those cities were built by these idol worshippers. And everything about those cities revolved around idol worship. The names and the styles and they had many things that they built in honor of the idols, and many things named after idols and named after priests and named after different events. You know, if you just leave it as is, and then you leave your children to go fight a war and just leave them alone, they're going to look around and they're going to ask questions and try to figure out, well, what's going on here? Why is this called this? And clearly, we see later on from the Pesukim that certain names of the cities were named after idols, and they were renamed. The Pasuk mentions they were renamed because they shouldn't. Because of the fact that you don't want to have living in a city, you know, named after an idol. But originally, the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven thought, says the Bnei Yosef, that they could just move it as is, and there's not that much work to do for their families. Says the Bnei Shrebedu, no, you can't leave them like this. You can't leave the cities as is because it poses too much negative influence. And based on its past history, it has too much of an influence of idol worship, and that can influence your children. You can't just say, oh, you know, I got a lot of work. I got to build a lot of pens. I got to build a lot of stables. I just got to do renovations in the house. Oh, no. No, no. You have to rebuild the cities. You have to start it all from the beginning. And therefore, your bigger job is actually for your families, because you have to rebuild the homes and the cities that they're going to be living in. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're going to build cities for your children and pens for your sheep. Now, the work order has changed around. The bigger job is the children. But what Rashi is saying, when Rashi is citing the Medrash, says that the Negadu B'nei Reuven were more concerned with their money than their children, is coming to explain why did the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven not realize this? Why did they need Moshe Rabbeinu to point that out to them? Why was it so simple to them in the beginning, you know, that the smaller job is the houses for the families? Where did that mistake come from? The mistake came from the fact that they were focused on their money. That was their focus. Because that was their focus, so they were focused on the money, and therefore, okay, from that point, got a bigger job for their sheep than my family. Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's not the focus. That's not how you do it. That's not how the focus should be. You should never have a focus in which you're so focused on your money that you would forget about your children. Because no matter what we do with our physical assets, we always, always have to stop and think, what spiritual effect will this have? Don't just be focused on the material. Don't just be focused on your material needs. Because if that's all you be focused on, that can make you make mistakes, as happened here. You always need, any time you have those material endeavors, you always have to ask yourself the question, what kind of spiritual effect is this going to have on my family, on myself? So therefore, says the Ber Yosef, what B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven were doing when they mentioned the cattle for the children is not because cattle is more important. That was the bigger job. So they mentioned the bigger job first. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, the bigger job is the other way, because you have to rebuild the cities over. Because you think, in your mind, the cities are ready to move in. A little bit of renovations have to be done. In your mind, you don't have a lot of work to do for your families. You have a tremendous amount of work to do for your families, because you can't allow them to live in the cities as is, because that'll have a negative influence on them. Your bigger job is to build the cities, because you have to rebuild them. And the reason why B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven missed out on that, the reason why B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven did come across, by missing this, they were, again, by missing what Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, that does mean that they were more concerned with the cattle than the children. Yeah, they were more concerned because they thought there was more work to be done. But that in itself was the problem. The problem is that they were too focused on, not because they loved their children less than their money, but they were too concerned, too focused on the money, and only on the money. And that caused them not to think what they should have thought about and contemplated about for the sake of their children. Because any time that we have to deal with monetary issues, we have to deal with them. We have responsibility to deal with them. But anytime we deal with them, we can't only be focused on it. We have to be focused at the same time on our spiritual needs and make sure the two things will comply with each other. Okay, so that's the Ber Yosef's approach here. Okay, so now let's go back now to somewhere, to an earlier part of the parasha. So in the beginning of the parasha, we have the laws of vows, and then we have Hashem telling Moshe that the Jewish people need to fight a war against the Midianites because of the destruction they brought upon the Jewish people by allowing their daughters to seduce the Jewish men into idol worship. And the soldiers were chosen from their tribes. They went out and they fought a war. They destroyed the Midianites, and they brought back lots of booty, lots of possessions from the cities that they conquered. So take a look on page 906. Pasuk Chafei. Vayimah Hashem Amei Shalema. Hashem said to Moshe, So esreish makoyach hashvi ba'adamu v'behema, take a count of everything of man and animals that were captured. Tov Elazar Akayin Rashi Abay Sa'eda, you Elazar, and the heads of the tribes. V'chatzis Ham Akayach. And that which has been captured, you shall divide. Between those who actually waged war, those who actually waged war, or then Kala Aid and the rest of the assembly. So, even though this was all captured by those who went out to war, because again, it wasn't all the Jewish people went out to war. It was 1,000 per tribe. Okay? They fought the war. They captured all that stuff. Hashem says, he divided it in half. Half goes to the soldiers, half goes to the rest of the Jewish people. And you shall take off a tax to Hashem. From the people who went out to war, one soul from 500. From the people that were captured, from the cattle, from the donkeys, from the sheep. From their half you shall take it. And that separation you shall now give to Elazar the Kayin. So from the half of the possessions that of the soldiers who went out to war, you have this one from every 500 souls. Okay? From all the things that were taken. And from the other half of the that went to the Jewish people, tikachachar achuz min hachamishim, you'll take one from 50. Min ha'adam, min ha'bakar, min ha'chamayim, min ha'tzen, min kal behema, from all the different things. And you should give them to the Levim, those who guard the Mishkan. Okay? So they have all this booty. The Mishnah says, divide them to the soldiers, the rest of the Jewish people, and from each half, there's a certain amount that's given to Hashem. From the soldiers, you take a certain amount that goes to the Kohen Gadol, and the other half of the Jewish people goes to the Levim. And then the Torah goes through the entire number of everything that was captured and what was separated and what went and how everything went where it's supposed to go. And then take a look towards the bottom of the page, Pasuk Memches, which is about 5 lines from the bottom. Vayikrevu el Moshe hapkudim asher la'alfei hatzava. Those that have been appointed over the thousands of the soldiers of the army approached Moshe. Officers of thousands, officers of hundreds. They said to Moshe, your servants have taken count of the numbers of the soldiers. No one's missing. No one died. But our craving is coming to Hashem, and therefore we have brought forth a sacrifice, a gift to Hashem. Ish asher matzah kli zav etzadav etzamit tabas agav achumaz. Any man who found these different pieces of jewelry, we have brought them as a gift to Hashem, v'chaper nafshe senot me Hashem, to atone for our souls before Hashem. V'yikach Moshe was akreinas azav me'itam, Moshe was took the gold from them, kol klimaso, all these utensils, tells us how much they were, and then Pasuk Nun Gimel says, anshi atzav abazu ishvai, each soldier took his own portion, v'yikach Moshe was akreinas azav me'isari alaf ha'meis, Moshe also took the gold from the officers, and they brought it to the Mishkan, as a remembrance to the Jewish people before Hashem. So you've got the things that were captured, divided amongst the soldiers and the Jewish people. From those halves, there was a certain amount given to Hashem. Then you had the officers coming forth and showing gratitude to Hashem for the fact those soldiers were lost, and they gave a certain amount of gold. The soldiers, each soldier took, you know, what he had a right to take, and the gold that they gave was put in the Mishkan as a remembrance of the Bnei Yisrael before Hashem. So I want to read to you an interesting sermon from a sefer called Mereshes Moshe from Rabbi Moshe Swift. He was a rabbi in London in South Africa, and he died in 1983. So his career stretched. His career as a rabbi was during the war, after the war, and clearly the people he was talking to weren't always the most religious. And you know, he was trying to really get them and the children to be observant Jews. So he has this Rabbi Mitzvah sermon here on Parashas Matis. And he talks about this pasuk that we just read, how Elazar and Moshe and Elazar, HaKayin, brought the gold before Hashem as a remembrance for the Jewish people. So he says like this, God does not need our gifts. What we give him is only an expression of our thoughts. It is Zikar Lefnei Hashem, it's a remembrance before Hashem. It shows that we have not forgotten him. Al Tuv Kavanasim is rabbinic idiom. It is an indication of our good intentions. It is a way of saying thank you to God. Zikar remembering works both ways. If we remember him, he remembers us. Anshe Asava Bazazu Ishloi, the warriors took the booty, each man for himself. But they brought it to the Mishkan. They took some of the golden jewels and brought them to the sanctuary as a memorial before Hashem. Judaism does not demand your all for God. Enjoy what he provides, but thank him by making a bracha before a meal and benching afterwards, instead of getting up from the table like an animal without a word of gratitude. How long does it take to put on tefillin in the morning and say a few prayers? What he's saying from this part of the parsha is that here were these soldiers who went ahead and took whatever they had a right to take. At the same time, though, they showed Hashem, we haven't forgotten you. We realize the kindness that you did for us. We haven't forgotten you. And therefore, you don't need our gold, but it's our way of expressing our gratitude to you. We haven't forgotten you. And when we show Hashem that we haven't forgotten him, then he doesn't forget us. We remember him, he remembers us. That's the Karen Lefnei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu took this gold, this gift, where the soldiers were saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, we remember what you did for us. And the Rabbeinu Shalom then says, I'll remember you for good. And it's a lesson, he says, that tells us, you don't have to give up everything. You don't have to give everything away. You can partake of what Hashem gives for you. Partake, but don't forget him. And don't forget him means make brachas. Bench, daven, put on tefillin. All these things are all part of saying to Hashem, thank you. We recognize it comes from you. We remember you. The freewill offering of gold and jewels was not the only thing that the warriors of Israel gave up. There was also the machtzis, the half of the livestock, asher chatzah Moshe, which Moshe divided off from the warriors for those Israelites who were not sent out to battle. And then from this half, Moshe took one out of 50 and gave them to the Levites. Chatzah means to divide. The Torah teaches the importance of being willing to share. Some for God and some for oneself. Some for self and some for others. If everyone would realize the significance of the term chatzah and the importance of applying it in life, how much better this world would be. When these soldiers went ahead and they fought a war and they took all these possessions, they were taught a lesson that you can take, but you should share. Even for those who didn't come along. Even for those who didn't do the work. But you don't have to take everything for yourself. You can share. You can give. And of course, you give a portion to Hashem also. To be a true Jew can be pleasant and honorable. But it means sharing with God. By all means, have neat clothes. But have tzitzis. Two. Enjoy nice food. But ensure that it's kosher. Work and earn, but Shabbos should be God's day of spiritual rest and rejuvenation. Pursue your chosen secular studies, but find time for Torah study too. Keeping pace hand in hand with God, life leads forward from bar mitzvah, the threshold of Jewish adolescence, to a fine Jewish manhood, a source of pride and a pillar of strength to our community. But his whole point is that what the Pasha is trying to let us know is that you have all these possessions. You're given all these possessions. You share it with others. You give to Hashem. And then, when they actually on their own went ahead and offered more, and they said to Hashem, we're not forgetting you, we remember what you've done for us, that becomes a way that Hashem remembers us. We remember him, he remembers us. So to me, following this approach, what's happening to the Jewish people at this point is the following. The first thing that's happening is that they're being told that half is being given away. They didn't give away half. They're being told half is being given away. And they're also being told from each half there'll be a portion given to Hashem. They're being taught these lessons. that eat that you have a right to take and to enjoy, but make sure you share. Make sure you share with Hashem. Make sure you share with others. When they went then on their own, and they did even more, and they said, and on their own they said to Rabbi Nishalaylam, we remember you. That was something they did on their own. They weren't told to do that. This was something on their own that they understood that the kindness of Hashem to them was so great that they have to show the Rabbi Shalom, we remember your kindness. And when they did that, that is the remembrance that we now receive from Hashem. When they're told what to do, that may not be the remembrance that, for Hashem. They're being told, and they have to be told, they have to be taught. But then when it comes from themselves, when it comes from their own goodwill, and they say to Hashem on their own, we remember you, that's when Hashem remembers us. So every time we go ahead and we make a bracha, let's say, right? To make a bracha. So there's two ways you can make a bracha. I have to make a bracha. It's the halacha. And then you make a bracha where you express to the Rabbi Nishalayim with feeling your thanks. You can do it in two ways. You can do it because you're told to do it. And you need to be told to do it, because if we aren't told to do it, we're not going to do it. But then after you're told to do it, do you do it because you're told to do it? Or do you do it because you put your own feeling into it? You do it because you're doing it to really express your thanks to Hashem. Any time, as Diane Swift said, enjoy your food, but remember Hashem. Enjoy your clothing, but remember Hashem. That remembering of Hashem that we do is that remembering that we do that becomes the way that Hashem remembers us is the remembering that we do from ourselves. Not the remembering that we do because we have to do it. The remembering that we do from ourselves that comes from within. Which again, it starts from the obligation to make a bracha. But how we make the bracha, the feeling we put into bracha, the meaning that we put into a bracha, in which we really show Hashem, we remember you here. We know you've given this to us, and we remember you for giving it to us. That remembering to Hashem is what creates, when we remember Hashem, that creates that Hashem remembers us. Okay. The last thing for tonight. Again, working backwards. Take a look on page 904. And it's Pasuk Zion. Vayitzbu Midyan, and they gathered against Midyan, Kashativa Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe, Vayagu Kol Zachar, and they killed every male. Vesmalchei Midyan and the kings of Midyan, Hargua Chavaleim, they killed together with all the other dead bodies, Es Evi, Ves Rekem, Ves Sur, Ves Chur, Ves Reva. They killed the five kings, Chameshes Malchei Midyan, the five kings of Midian. They were Evi, Rekem, Tzur, Hur, and Reva. Okay? There's a medrash that says that the third king, Tzur, was actually Balak, which means he was a king of Moab and Midian. Now, this is not the first time that this man, Tzur, is mentioned. Because if we go back to Parshas Pinchas, beginning of Parshas Pinchas, when the Torah tells us who were the people that Pinchas killed, page 876, Pasuk Tesvav, last sentence of the first paragraph. V'shem ha'isha ha'mukah Midyanis, the name of the Midianite woman that was killed, Kozmi Vas Tzur, Kozmi, the daughter of Tzur, Resh Umayis Beis Abba Midyan Hu, he was the head of the nations of houses of the father in Midyan. So Kozmi's father was Tzur. Tzur is the Resh. Kozmi is the head of the peoples of a father's house in Midian. Which means that, as Rashi points out, he was the main king. He was the main one. Of the five kings, he was the Resh Umayis Beis Av. He was the head of the peoples. He was the greatest of all those kings. Okay? If so, there's a problem. If he was the greatest of the kings, why will we mention of kings being killed? Why isn't he mentioned first? If he's the greatest of the kings, he should be mentioned first. Rashi in Parshas Pinchas explains, you know, why is that mentioned first? So Rashi says, Ruah Yachashu Mikulam, Shinama Reish Umais. Tzur was really the most important. He's called Reish Umais, the head of the peoples. Ulefi Shinag Bezayim Ba'atzmai. But because he disgraced himself, Lahafker Bitai, to allow his daughter to go out and just be, to mafka her, to let her just go out and be open for moral acts, Mono Shlishi. They lowered his rank and they counted him as the third. So here he was the greatest of the kings, but he lowered himself. He disgraced himself by allowing his daughter just to go out and to seduce and to be open to anybody who wants to take her, or to allow her to go and act morally like that, to act without marriage. He lowered himself, he disgraced himself, the Torah counts him a third. So the question is, the fact that Tzur is counted third, who's that for? Who does that make a difference to? Make a difference to Tzur? Does he care how he's counted in the Torah? Besides the fact that he's dead by then. Okay? Like, who is this for? Lowering him, you know, demoting him. Who's that? Us? We need to know he's a lowlife? We don't. We need to know that. So who is this for?
It's for us.
For what?
Like your daughters.
Ah, come on. You don't need the Torah to count them as third to know that. You know that. You don't need this for that. I don't think you need that. So. I think if you want to say your approach, you need to say something more than just like, respect your daughters. We know that. We know that. We know that what they did was a terribly immoral thing. The Torah tells us not to allow such things.
So there are consequences if you don't.
What's the consequence? You don't think you know that? You need to learn from Tzur the consequences of that?
You need to be reminded.
Okay. And it just seems that you know, we don't need this for that. I don't know. Maybe you're right. It just seems like, you know, we need to know that, you know, it's such a terrible thing. They think that the Torah demotes him. Maybe. So Rabbi Fran says like this. So I thought at one point that maybe the demotion was maybe the Midianites themselves demoted him. I thought. Maybe the Torah is expressing that the Midianites demoted him. But I looked up the Medrash, it doesn't sound like that. The Medrash sounds like, Medrash seems to say, the Torah demotes him, but he was Reish Umais, so he was the head of all the kings. He was the top man. So my friend says, gives the following explanation. He says that, you know, so what's our question? We're trying to figure out, who is this a message for? For us? We don't seem to need the message. For him, what would he care? He really cares? So Refrain says, now he does. You know, in the state of where he is now, in Olam Haba, in the afterlife, yeah, he does care. In this world, if you would have told him, you know what, the Torah is going to go ahead and list you third, would he be bothered by it? Maybe yeah, maybe not. Because in this life, you can ignore things. But in the Olam Ha'emes, in the world of truth, Where even Rishayim, you know, Rishayim live on, not in a way that we want to be, but their neshamas live on, and they are open to the greatest embarrassment for what they've done, and they understand what the truth is. They understand what even if they never led a spiritual life, now they know what spirituality really means. So now in their state of being, the fact that the Torah lowers their status, that the Torah basically took away their honor of a king, their honor as a king. The Torah took away that honor that he deserved as a king and put him third on the line and lowered his honor. Yeah, that means a lot. That means something to him. The fact that the Torah lowers him means something to him. Maybe his life didn't mean anything to him, but in the state that he's in now, in the afterlife, means a lot to him.